Period of time. Our thesis today is that activism is a spiritual path. We've been focusing this year on different lenses through which we view the Holocaust from a spiritual perspective, and through the eyes of different individuals who lived in the 20th century. And today we're going to look at it through the eyes of Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the late chief rabbi of Israel, the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, and his perspective, his role, his life story, specifically as it relates to activism. Because he was a spiritual giant in many realms, and you could think about Rabbi Herzog through the lens of fusing Jewish law and a modern state, which was a major focus of his life in the state of Israel in his work as the chief rabbi. You can focus on his role in revitalizing the practice of wearing blue-colored tchila strings in the modern era. You could focus on the fact that Rabbi Herzog was a tremendous, brilliant, unbelievably accomplished Torah scholar. We have many, many handouts today, because I think it's important for you to get the full scope and some of the documents. This handout that you have that is totally in Hebrew, it's from this volume, which we're going to use today, reference. This is an amazing volume. It's called Masua LeYitzchak. It is the Hebrew volume that is in tribute to Rabbi Herzog, Sefer Zikaron, Lamaran HaGaon Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the chief rabbi, 50 years after his passing. So this was published not too long ago. He passed away in 1959. So in 2009, they published this amazing work. I gave you one small selection. This is the selected bibliography of Rabbi Herzog's written published works. Do you see this? This is on the front. Eight books. And after the eight books, do you see how many published articles? This is a total of 163 published items, including, you see here, actually, published works in English. He spoke 12 languages. 136 articles, just to appreciate the scholarship of Rabbi Herzog. Unbelievable. But what we're going to focus on today briefly is his activism, his outspoken work on behalf of Jews before, during, and after the Holocaust. Rav Herzog, Zichron Levracha, he was born on December 1st, 1888, in Lomża. Lomża was a very prominent Polish rabbinic town. His father, Rav Yoel Herzog, was a well-known, accomplished Torah scholar and also a very open-minded person. Yes, he was born in Lomża. But then his father was invited 9 years later to become the rabbi. First, he was in a small place, and then he was actually in the United States for a very brief time. And then in 1897, he became a rabbi in Leeds.
Oh, Leeds.
His father, exactly. So he's a 9-year-old boy. He had been learning as a young child, already finished two starim of Shas, and was recognized as a brilliant Talmud Chacham. And he moves to Leeds. As a teenager, primarily, first, he devotes himself exclusively to intensive Torah study, not in a traditional yeshiva, in his father's house, in his home. Then his father becomes a rabbi for the Orthodox community in Paris, which is a whole another story. He studies in the Sorbonne. Ultimately, he gets a PhD in literature in the University of London on his work on Tchelas, on this, the search for this ancient blue dye. So he's a remarkable, brilliant scholar. If you want more on the biography and the background, this is the book. It's called The Rabbinate in Stormy Days, The Life and Teachings of Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the first chief rabbi of Israel. It's authored by Shol Mazlish. You have a little selection over here, which we're going to come back to, but you have the, this is the authoritative biography of Rav Herzog. It has hakdamas, introductions from Rabbi Herzog's son from the first edition. Rabbi Herzog's son was Chaim Herzog, who was the president of Israel. And now his grandson, Rav Herzog's grandson, the current, right, president of Israel.
Right.
So his son was the president of Israel. Now his grandson is the president of Israel. The president of Israel currently is Isaac Herzog, who's named for his grandfather, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. So if you want more biographical information, this is the place to go. It's an excellent book. It's translated in English, called The Rabbinate in Stormy Days. So Rav Herzog, he gets his PhD, but really he's primarily focusing on his Talmudic studies. He, at the same time, is active in the Mizrahi movement. He is a religious Zionist Torah leader. He has a broad view of the world. He's studying in literature and sciences. And he becomes a rabbi, first in Belfast, then in Dublin, and then becomes ultimately the chief rabbi of Ireland. I think that was in 1919, and serves for 15, 16 years. He speaks perfect English. So he speaks Yiddish, he speaks German, French, English, and he now has this congregation. This congregation, which also has political ties, which he's going to use to great extent later, which I'm not going to get into today, but Shaul Mazlish deals with it at great length. He becomes the chief rabbi of Israel after the passing of Rav Kook in 1935. There was an election in which he runs against, he was very reticent, he was hesitant, he was not pushing his candidacy initially, but he received major support from great rabbinic luminaries across Europe, and he was elected the first chief rabbi after Rav Kook. In December of 1936, the election took place. Rav Kook died in 1935. The election took place in 1936. He only made one visit to Israel prior to that, and he was giving shiurim and lectures and talks in all different places. The other contender that year was Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, Zichrono Levracha, who was a Rosh Hashiva in Rav Kook's yeshiva. And there was some, you know, always some tension about these kinds of things. He served as the chief rabbi of Israel until his passing in 1959. So you think about that, that is pre-war. He had a lot of connections with the underground fighters, which we're not going to talk about today, but it's very interesting stories. Founding of the State of Israel, first couple of years of the State of Israel, he is primarily responsible, with the help of Shai Agnon, there's a lot more to say about this also, for the composition of the prayer for the government of the State of Israel. What many synagogues say on Shabbos, Avinu Shabbat Shemayim, that was composed by Rav Herzog in concert with, any guesses, who was another great spiritual, religious author living at that time, later becomes a Nobel Prize winner. Nope. Living in Israel, Nobel Prize winner, author, yes, Shai Agnon. Shai Agnon and Rav Herzog correspond to exactly what the Nusach should be for the contemporary, and there's a lot of interesting historical discussions about this. But this is just kind of the overall backdrop of Rav Herzog's life to lead us to what I want to focus with on you today, which are Rav Herzog's, just a tiny sliver of perspective on Rav Herzog's activities as an activist for Jews in Europe. Pre-war, there is a collection of essays. This is really interesting. It's from this, you have the article there. It's called From Dublin to Jerusalem, Sermons of Rabbi Isaac Herzog. So this professor from the Leo Beck College in London, Mark Saperstein, went and did some research collecting sermons, and this is absolutely fascinating. Look on page 2. This is Rav Herzog's drasha, at the Adelaide Road Synagogue in Dublin, and it was published by the Irish Press June 1st, 1933. So Rav Herzog is using his pulpit for activism on behalf of German Jews, because already, just within the first few months, Jews were facing terrible anti-Semitism and persecution. So what can a person who's living in Dublin do? Can raise money, can raise awareness, can get people to be active. So the Drasha, amazing, published in the Irish Press. Amazing how he found this. Before Germany could speak of wrongs inflicted on her, before she could speak of justice, she must first and foremost cease to trample underfoot 600,000 of her most faithful and creditable citizens. Who's Rav Herzog talking about? He's talking about the initial German rhetoric at the rise of Nazism, which was all about righting the wrong of the Treaty of Versailles, how the Germans were ripped off and they were wronged and everything. He's saying, well, what are you doing now? You're persecuting your own citizens. And it's going from bad to worse. Speaking up about anti-Jewish persecution. Skip to the next page. Same shul, April 1934. And then again, in Friday, September 18th, 1936. Talking about anti-Semitism. Think of Germany, think of Poland, and think of a country nearer home. Could it ever have entered into our minds that in free, democratic England, there would arise a tide of anti-Semitism which threatens to widen and deepen, and which gives our brethren over there cause for very great anxiety? And what is the position of the land of Israel, that little land of ours, thousands of miles away, for which we have been praying and hoping and shedding torrents of tears for nearly 2,000 years? The Israelite has lived by his faith for thousands of years, and he will continue to live in that faith to the end of his days. There are more drushos in the beginning of this book, the first part of this Sefer Zikaron, the memorial volume to Rav Herzog. They have several other drushos from this period, from this pre-war period. There are other sermons in here that deal with other topics, especially relating to Israel. But first of all, to recognize that Rav Herzog already in the 1930s, early in the 1930s, was speaking out about the plight of German Jews and raising money. Probably the most, well, maybe not the most famous, one of the most famous aspects of Rav Herzog's activism was his trip to the United States during the war, once he was the chief rabbi of Israel, to visit with FDR. That's right. And that section is described here in this section from the Shol Maizlish book. So I just gave it to you, Xeroxed it. Thank you to Geffen Publishing House. We're not going to sell this. We're not using it for commercial purposes. We are just using it for learning. Where the section describes how at the end of 1940, Rav Herzog left Israel for 7 months to travel to the United States and South Africa, trying to raise money to help Jews. He was very active through the entire war in the efforts for rescue, the Vada Hatzala, writing letters, begging, trying.
Also, at his own peril, crossing the Atlantic.
Yes!
At that moment.
You know what's very interesting? Mickey's point was that it was actually a personally dangerous thing. He was supposed to go back on a ship. He ended up getting kicked off that ship on a separate ship, and the ship that he was supposed to go back on sank. It sank.
On the last ship,
I forget the name of the ship. They have it in the book.
Yeah.
The ship sank that he was supposed to be on. It was not like today you get on a flight. He was literally risking his life. But what's amazing is that he marshaled his entire self, all of his rabbinic contacts, all of his political contacts, all of the contacts through his office as the chief rabbi of Israel, and not just risking his life, he also, there was a whole discussion when he was in Europe later, which we'll get to in a second, of what the toll that it took on his health. He was running himself absolutely ragged, but he was desperately in any way possible trying to save lives. So he was active. It is true that one path of spiritual resistance is prayer. That's the one. If God doesn't help, nothing happens. But on the other hand, Rav Herzog, and this is the model that we are emphasizing today, is that there also needs to be what we call in Hebrew, hishtadlus, human effort, activism. That we don't sit back. Hebrew word is hishtadlut, lishtadel. Exactly. In Yiddish, you would call it hishtadlus.
Okay.
Right? In Yiddish, somebody who is a...
At least to try.
Yeah, an activist is called a shtadlan. Or they would, a shtadlan in Europe. They would have people, they were machin around, they would try. So Rav Herzog, he would not rest from the early 30s through into the war. He shows up and he gets a meeting with FDR, which, as we know, most people and other Jews could not get at that time. He was disappointed with the level of fundraising support that he got at that time. And I'll just mention, just autobiographically, that when I think of these ideas and the notion of the Vad Hatzalah and helping Jews, I cannot tell you that I have not thought about the situation in Ukraine over the past month and our responsibility. We're sitting here, you know, I ate a very good lunch today. And no one shot at my car on the way here. Right? So wait a second. If you were living in New York when Rav Herzog got there in 1940, no one was shooting at you either. And no one was dragging you out of your home. And no one was bombing you.
And he's still.
So we have to say to ourselves, wait a minute. When the Vada Atzala, when Rav Herzog came knocking, did people give enough? So we have to ask ourselves. This is just my own autobiographical note. I'm asking myself, have I given enough over the last month? However many there are, Jews, Gentiles, these people are being bombarded mercilessly, treacherously. Jews, how are they going to have... We sit in this classroom in the Holocaust Museum, we talk about, oh, amazing, they had shipments of goods for Passover in the Warsaw Ghetto. How did they have that? Someone donated. Someone's going to go collecting in the next 2 weeks. You're going to see emails, or you should look around. They need Pesach products in Kharkov, in Kiev, in Dnepropetrovsk, or whatever, every place to announce these places. You know what I'm saying? So the history that we're learning, it's not just history. We have to ask ourselves, are we digging deep for that need?
It's replaying
today. We're seeing a lot. Now, it was interesting, and I don't want to get too caught up on this, it was interesting that the president of Ukraine, when he spoke to the Knesset this past week, he said some things that were, you could say, historically inaccurate or misrepresenting perhaps the way that the overwhelming majority of Ukrainians treated Jews. Yeah, I think I saw in the newspaper that 2,800 Ukrainians are listed among the righteous among the nations. 2,800. Yeah, but I think 80,000 Ukrainians signed up to be auxiliary soldiers for Hitler, Yimach Shemo. So just, you know, it's... That doesn't mean that we shouldn't help these people, and it's not a Rachmanis, and, you know, the Rabbonu Shalom, God wants us, lahatzil oshok mead oshko, to help those who are oppressed at the hands of their oppressors. But it's just important. Let's just know exactly, as my grandfather, Shmuel Levrach, would say, let's know what's what. All right, so before that, I don't want to get too far over from this, but this, yes.
That are on the issue. We cannot judge the people today for the people who have done it.
Exactly. And even if, right, these people, it's different people, and they're suffering. They're human beings who are suffering under no fault of their own. These people, innocent people, totally, they're totally suffering.
You know, I read in Israel an article. I'm so proud, first of all, of the way Israel is reacting with their refugee camps and their mobile hospitals. And they're not asking, are you Jewish or are you not Jewish? If you're human, but there was a little piece that caught my eye, which I think is worth sharing, that today in Ukraine, 17 righteous remain alive.
Interesting.
Out of the 28. And
17 righteous among the nations still are alive today.
And the very first thing,
Ukrainian righteous among the nations.
I read this, so this war started February 24th,
right.
And on February 25th, I read an article that said they all have Israeli citizenship because that's part of the award.
Righteous among the nations.
And that they sent somebody in and approached those 17 and said, how can we help you?
Very nice.
Off the top, and many of them chose to stay. They didn't want to come, but many have family and connections in Israel. And I'm saying many, 17.
All right, so I want to.
Speaking about Israel, I read this morning in some newspaper I picked up at the Romanian that 2,000 refugees have come to Israel.
Yeah.
Only 10% of them are Jewish.
Yes.
And the state of Israel is reconsidering if they want to continue taking in refugees.
Okay, so this is an important discussion. Yeah, we're going to table that for now with respect. Let's come back here.
Can I just ask in relation to what you're talking about?
Yes.
How did the meeting go?
That's what we're going to get to right now. So he meets with FDR on April 15th, 1941. He recites the blessing. There is a blessing that Talmud says in Maseches Brachos, in Tractate Brachos, that if you meet a king, so you recite a blessing over that person. You recite a blessing if you see a lot of people. You see a blessing if you see fascinating creatures. There are special blessings. So seeing the leader of the free world, of the President of the United States, Rav Herzog recited a bracha, She'cholak mechachmasa lebasar v'dam, and he translated it. And they had a very complimentary meeting. If you take a look here, it's on 77. Rav Herzog describes the situation in Europe. Turn the page over to 78. At the end, he says, I am not the person who will advise you on how to deal with this terrible problem. I come only with a plea and also a warning. The plea, save what can be saved. The warning, those who stood by will be held accountable in the future. Rav Herzog was escorted out of the meeting, and he left disappointed. But it didn't stop here. There's an interesting talk that was given by Rav Herzog, and in the book there's a whole another discussion about this. This is in the Hebrew version, which is why I didn't give it to you. I'll tell you where it is exactly. June 1944, there was a convention, there was a gathering in Israel that Rav Herzog got together, called a Yom HaZa'aka, a day of screaming, a day of praying. It's not in your book. I'm just reading it out from the Hebrew. For whom? Who was Rav Herzog crying about? June 5th, 1944, the 14th of Sivan Tavshin Dalev. Who's still left? June 1944. Who is this trying to raise awareness about, to talk about? That's right, Hungarian Jews.
Yes.
Meaning that Rav Herzog's efforts continued through the war, and when he became aware of what was going on in Hungary, they called a fast day, a day of prayer, and we actually have the speech that Rav Herzog gave to support those, what he called She'eris HaPleita. We call that She'eris HaPleita. That She'eris HaPleita, at the time, contemporaneously, in June of 1944, Bulgaria with Hungary and in the Balkans. But as we know, unfortunately, it didn't stave off the deportations. So what happens after the war? What does Rav Herzog do in 1946 after the war? He travels to Europe. Now it's about activism after the war. What's his main focus?
The orphans.
That's right.
You know
the orphans.
This story. I have been telling this story without knowing.
Good. So let's tell the story. Great. So let's go to the story.
All the time.
Oh, so I'm glad you got the story. There are This story is, take a look at this packet that's titled How 500 Children Were Returned to the Jewish People After the Holocaust.
Yes.
This is a fantastic piece, which I was able to come across using the internet, which is a great tool.
I didn't know if it was true or not, but I said it's a good story to tell.
Good, so we'll get to the story in 1 second. This article is excellent. It summarizes with a lot of documents you will see in here, letters to and from Rav Herzog about rescuing specific children with lists of names. This comes from a surprise find in the archives of the National Library of Israel. They are an amazing resource. I've used it very often for research, and I will tell you that they were helpful. They have amazing, amazing things. So I reached out to them about this article, and they actually gave me, I could send you, you can WhatsApp them. So I was WhatsApping with a librarian who sent me access. The letters are not accessible online, but the photographs. So there are some fantastic photographs of Rav Herzog that are in this collection. Basically, what happened was his name is Amder, had donated his personal collection to the National Library of Israel. They're going through his stuff, and they see in there a treasure trove of letters from Rav Herzog that were in this lawyer's collection, because he was a colleague of Rav Herzog. Somehow he got hold of these letters, and they published this whole article on Rav Herzog's work. So the beginning of it is this legend. Now, we do not know that this story is true, but it's a legend. And if it's not true, the spirit of the legend is true, that Rav Herzog, we know, he was traveling throughout Europe trying to find Jewish children. He goes to a convent, speaks to the mother superior. She says, we can't talk to you about the children here. We don't know anything about children. She says, okay. He says, I can't tell you what to do, but maybe, you know, we'll ask. I'm not going to take away the children from you, and I can't tell you which one is Jewish. All I'll ask is just have an opportunity to speak to them for 1 minute. As the other legend goes elsewhere, like he says, I have one thing to say, and he screams out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And the kids, dozens of kids start running. They say, Mama, Papa, they start running. So whether that legend is true or not, that was the mission of Rav Herzog after the war. And he went from all these different places throughout. It's very interesting. He gave a talk. There are two talks that are in here in Hebrew in this volume, which I didn't give you because it's all in Hebrew. Two talks that he gave. One was in Forenwald. Forenwald was the DP camp where, remember, Eisenhower went there on Yom Kippur after the war. That's the same DP camp where the Kloisenberger Rebbe was. So on Shavuos, on the holiday of Shavuos, in the DP camp, Rav Herzog spent Yontif there. I'll just give you one little Dvar Torah that he said. It's published here. He says a pasuk, a verse from the verse of Hallel. He spoke, imagine giving a sermon right before Musaf, like the rabbi would, in Forenwald. This was in the spring. It's in May of 1946, Shavuos. So what do we say? He says, the pasuk says, King David writes, Ki chilatzta nafshi mimaves, you have saved, grasped my soul from death, es eini min dima, es ragli midechi, my eye from tears, my foot from being crushed, from depression, es halech lefnei Hashem ba'artzos achayim. I will walk before God in the land of the living. I will walk before God in the land of the living. I believe as I speak. I have been suffering a lot. I said when I was in this distress, Kol Adam Kozev, I am despondent of humanity. That's the verse. So what does Rav Herzog say to the broken Jews of Forenwald? He says, this is your story. They're coming to a synagogue. They're coming to Daven after everything that happened to them. Hey, Monty, they still believe. What's his major theme? He says, God, chilatzta nafshi mibavis, God spare you. Es Eini Min Dima, all of the tears, all of the destruction. What's the next line? Es Halech Ba'artzos Hachayim. He says, we are here to take you in the land of the living. Where is that? Israel. Rav Herzog says, I am the chief rabbi of Israel. We are here for you. We're going to take you in. He says, our goal is that you should be able to thank God, kishetisku, when you merit b'mehera b'karov soon, lavor derech sha'arei tzion beis chayenu, to come to Israel. He says, only when you come to Israel will you be able to fully express this first and thank God. Because he says, does a person, you've been tormented by the wicked who have tried to destroy you. Even if you were to end up in some foreign land, even if they were to make you a citizen, lo hayu eila b'shvili chayim ba'emes, would you really feel like you're alive? Where do you want to be? In Israel. You don't want to be a citizen of another country of Europe. You want to be in Israel. And we're here to be with you and to support you and to tell you that the hope is that Israel is going to be open to you and you will come and you will be with us. That's what he said to them in his trip. There's a whole nother drasha here that he gave that was on Tu B'Av, right after Tisha B'Av in 1946 in Warsaw, in the Wara Kielos of Poland. You can imagine what was life like there. There was pictures in the book of Rav Herzog walking in the rubble of Warsaw. Keep in mind that this was really the land of his childhood. Even though he left when he was 9, he was a genius. Poland was, this was his milieu, and he's coming back. Why is he coming back? To go from place to place, orphanage to orphanage. The most famous, and with this we'll end, the most famous episode, I think, even more famous probably than the FDR visit, of Rav Herzog in his efforts for Hatzalah, was his meeting with the Pope.
With Pius the 12th?
Yes. That is the article that you have here. It's the book, some of you are probably familiar with this, it's called The Holocaust and Genocide Studies. This is from 2007. It's written by a guy by the name of Michael Maris. I had not heard of him before. But he also, it's of course talked about in the Shaul Mezlich book at length. And this is an entire article. The article is called, you see it on the top, The Vatican and the Custody of Jewish Child Survivors After the Holocaust. So he has a couple of pieces in here. One of these pieces is about Rav Herzog. And it's about Rav Herzog's visit to the Pope. If you look on the next picture, you actually see a picture of Rav Herzog, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, you see on the right side, in his rabbinic garb and his top hat, leaving the office of the Pope. He went with his son Yaakov to Europe. And it describes here the details of this visit. You can read it on your own. There is a lot of controversy about the role of the church in this issue. That's part of the beginning piece of this essay. And the difference for the church, from their standpoint, between Jewish children that were being claimed by institutions versus Jewish children that were being claimed by their parents, as well as Jewish children that had been baptized versus those that had not been baptized. At the end of the day, the Pope did not issue a papal bull to the extent that Rav Herzog had wanted and had asked for. Rav Herzog, though, was definitely accorded a great amount of respect, and there was some recognition. The fact is that the Pope, he did not usually meet people on Sunday. But because of his visiting schedule, Rav Herzog's schedule, he was in Rome on Sunday, and he visited with the Pope, and they made time for him even on Sunday, which for the Catholic people, that was a big deal. More than that, there's a big question. More than that, there's a big question, because the Pope said, come back with facts. So he comes back 2 days later with a memorandum, and he communicates back with the Pope. He meets with, if you look on page 393 here, he comes back with the chief rabbi of Rome. That's Rabbi David Prado, pictured on the left side. Yeah. But Lamaisa, the reality is that there was no papal bull, but there were definitely Catholics who supported and helped returning Jews. And you have to do more research than I did to get into the weeds of exactly which particular people were helpful, which were not. To what extent was the Pope, yes, helpful? There's a lot of discussion about the Pope's role during the Holocaust, that he didn't speak out more. The people who would defend him, they say, well, if he would have spoken out, that would have helped Nazi propaganda, because Rav Herzog tried to meet with him during the war. There's more to say about what the Pope did and didn't do. That's for experts on that historical context.
But there's so much more about the Pope.
Yes.
That's done.
Exactly. But the point that I want to take away from this...
Yes, met with him and appeared to be helpful, and he put a lot of stuff in block in front of Rev Herzog, who was not deterred.
Right, and that's really what I want to take out of this.
Even traveling in Poland at that point in time,
also
a very
visible no, exactly
Jew was extremely dangerous, and his health wasn't good.
Exactly,
and the Pope tasked him to go in personally to each one, and no matter what they put in front of him, he was not going to.
Exactly.
That's exactly.
And that to me is what, because I don't know enough about the Pope and the Holocaust, and honestly, it's not my interest really in field of study, certainly from a rabbinic standpoint. It doesn't really interest me. But what does interest me is the trajectory of Rav Herzog's activism.
Nothing
stopped him. He saw what was coming and he tried. In the middle of the war, he tried. After the war, he tried. And he writes in his diary how, at different times, how discouraged he was, but how much faith he had in God, that he believes in God, and that even if he's not succeeding or he is succeeding, God is with him on this mission. That's the end of the story.
Yeah, because if we talk about
the That's the end of the story. So here we go. You ready for the... I said it's the end of the story. Are you ready for the epilogue? Here's a great story. This is the epilogue. And I think this is really the main takeaway that is most important for us in terms of activism and the question of now what. There is a rabbi. His name is Rabbi Beryl Wein. I don't know if you remember him.
I know him
very well. So Rabbi Beryl Wein tells a story. It's published in many places. You can easily Google it. That he remembers as a boy that he went with his father to Midway Airport.
His father was a rabbi of the synagogue on the west side, on St. Louis and Douglas.
That's right. So he went with his father.
Across from the yeshiva.
Oh, exactly. You remember this? Do you remember this episode?
No, you do it.
Okay.
Chael was there.
So... He said, Rabbi Wein said, he remembered, I think he was 10 years old, he said, he went with his father, who was a rabbi, with a group of rabbis. They had a group of cars that went to Midway Airport. Now Midway Airport is a big airport, but he said at that time, you drove right up to the plane.
Right.
He said he was a little boy. You remember this?
Very well. I said, my grandmother
was playing
like that when she went to
Israel. Oh, so he says he was 10-year-old boy. He went with his father. A bunch of rabbis came with their cars. They had hired cars. Everyone's right there. Who gets off the plane? He sees a tall man in a rabbinic coat with a top hat. Who was it? It was Rav Herzog.
What?
He came to visit Chicago. Yes, there's a picture. This is a famous Maisa, famous story, that Rav Herzog comes to visit Chicago after the war. After he had gone through Europe and Poland and the Pope, the whole thing. So he comes to visit Chicago, and Rabbi Wein says they greeted him. It was a huge deal. The chief rabbi of Israel was flying and arriving in Chicago. They drove from Midway to the Skokie Yeshiva, to the Beis Medrash LaTorah, which was on the west side. I don't know where it was, but...
St. Louis and Douglas.
There it is, St. Louis and Douglas. You know what I'm talking about. So he says that Rav Herzog spoke in the Heichal of the Yeshiva, and he asked... that not only the rabbis were there, he gave a shiur, and then he asked that all the boys should come, the bachrim from the yeshiva. It wasn't just, it was obviously rabbeim and dignitaries and rabbis, but he said the place was packed. So he gave a shiur. He said, first of all, he was completely shocked that when Rav Herzog spoke to them, he spoke to them with an Irish English. Right? An Irish broke. He said, Rav Herzog said he wants to talk to the children, to the boys. And Rabbi Wein said he saw something that he had never seen in his life. He said a grown man, a rabbi with a beard, the chief rabbi, a genius, stood before everyone and he started crying. He said he had never seen a grown man cry, let alone the chief rabbi. He said Rav Herzog put his hands over his face and he started bawling. And he said to them, do you know what I've seen? Do you know what happened? And do you know what's happening right now? He said to them, he said, I met with the Pope and I've gone different places and there are thousands of Jewish children. They're out there, but they're lost. The future of the Jewish people, what is going to be with the future of the Jewish people? You, the children, you need to ensure the future of the Jewish people. What are you going to do to ensure the Jewish people continue? That is the postscript of Rav Herzog. So Rabbi Wein says that when this was over, everybody was dumbstruck. He said that each of the boys lined up to shake his hand. He said that Rav Herzog stopped each boy and looked them in the eye and asked them in English, did you understand what I said?
Irish English.
Irish English. What are you going to do for the future of the Jewish people? Rabbi Wein said that that became a defining moment in his life. That whenever, you know, he's a very prominent historian and a rabbi and a published author and all these things. Whenever he felt like he couldn't do more or he was stymied or he was discouraged, he heard the words of Rav Herzog right here in Chicago, right here, saying to him as a 10-year-old, what are you going to do for the future of the Jewish people? That is ultimately the greatest achievement of a rabbinic activist. Because he continued to stay focused on the focus in terms of specifically activity. What are you going to do? Empowerment. It's not about being passive and lamenting, which of course there's a place for that. There's Yom Tza'aka. But there is a notion of what are you going to do? For Rav Herzog, it was as in this part, this small sliver of his life, pre-war, during the war, after the war, it's all about what are you going to do? It's about spiritual activism. That is the message. That's, at least to me, the lens through which Rav Herzog threw everything. Saw everything. Through which he saw everything. What can we do? What do we do now? Who do I need to call? Who do I need to speak to? Look through these letters. These letters in this packet from the National Library. The people, the individuals, it's mind-blowing. But it was unceasing because he was driven by this mission, by this calling of saying, what can we do? And that, I think, is really the question for all of us that Rav Herzog is asking us. How can we be active in ensuring the future of the Jewish people? What are we doing? It's really amazing. And to see how his entire career, his rabbinic leadership was focused on this before, during, after the war, and then beyond to inspire people like us today, that I think is such a powerful takeaway.